Hello, apology. Sorry for your loss. We need, and I would ask people across the country to write to the city of Greensboro to demand a full, in-depth apology for criminal action on their part.
Dr. Marty Nathan, widow of Dr. Mike Nathan. She is a survivor. He died 40 years ago. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Next up at 8, we have More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Latin American Film Festival at the Hollywood Theater. The next film in the series, Song Without a Name, Canción Sin Nombre, is showing Wednesday, November 6th at 7:30 p.m. This visually striking period piece is a Kafka-esque crime thriller inspired by real events. A stranger-than-fiction true story of stolen babies in 1980s Peru provides the narrative inspiration of Leon's debut feature. Again, that's Song Without a Name, Canción Sin Nombre, showing Wednesday, November 6th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stop the Climate Crisis and War. On Tuesday, November 5th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church in Portland. Stop the Climate Crisis and War is a forum and panel discussion which will link the issues of climate change and war, update the community on U.S. belligerence in Iran and Venezuela, focus on the U.S.'s role in the war on Yemen and presence in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, and more. Again, that's Stop the Climate Crisis and War on Tuesday, November 5th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Augustana Lutheran Church, 2710 Northeast 14th Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio, and we are broadcasting live on Monday, November 4th, 2019. And you are listening via the World Wide Web. It's KBOO.fm. On the radio, it's 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Point South, Corvallis, Albany, and Philomath area. And I'm Cecil Prescott, and I want to greet you on this morning. Now, for those of you who are listening live, who may have been asleep the last day or two, time changed, so it's earlier than you know. Is it later than you think or earlier than you think? Whatever. It's 8 a.m. and not 9 a.m. So that's part of the news today. Let me shut down these things so they won't keep blasting into you. Let me give you our phone numbers. It's 503-231-8187. For those of you who are listening live, who just heard Democracy Now! And it ended with something I wanted to mention this morning. Yesterday, November 3rd, was the 40th anniversary of the Greensboro Massacre. 40 KKK and Nazis opened fire on an anti-Klan rally sponsored by activists in the Communist Workers Party. Five people were killed. No one, not a single person, was convicted. That's one thing to remember. Today, November 4th, 1979, 40 years ago, students took over the U.S. Embassy in Iran and held 52 hostages for 444 days, leading to their release on January 20th, 1981. Oh, that's important in and of itself. But also today, 1 year after that, on November 4th, 1980, Ronald Reagan was elected. And for many of us, those are signs of, I don't want to say the downfall, but certainly a change in the direction of the American society, the projectile of American politics began to take, at least the election of Ronald Reagan was the electoral signal of a change in the direction of the political fortune, political direction in American politics. I don't think it takes too much to connect the dots to where we are today, where Donald Trump is the president of the United States. So a lot has happened in the last 40 years, which leads us to an opportunity to discuss that and some reflection about where we are today. Celis and I wanted to begin our conversation this morning by having people reflect, put those things in the background, and begin our conversation by talking about how people speak to one another. Many of you might be aware of former President Obama's recent speech where he lectured on those who attempted to call out wrong by reminding us or telling the listeners that the call-out culture is flawed by failure to recognize the lack of purity among any of us. Mr. Obama wanted to say that all of us are on a journey, all society, all peoples are on a journey, and that no one or group has all the knowledge, and no one is pure in their thinking. Mr. Obama said, and I'm paraphrasing now, that we must recognize that we are all imperfect beings, and following, I think, a tradition that a view of human nature, which I think in the mid 20th century, Reinhold Niebuhr, a cultural historian and theologian, talked about the lack of the ability for purity, and that we are all flawed individuals and our institutions, which is, I think, a key, are imperfect. Mr. Obama has, in the past, has had an ability to speak in paternalistic, and talking down to those who are who would seek to make right and to challenge systems. And there's a history of this where look over his career, and mostly from 2006, 2007, where he had a habit of lecturing activists and black people in particular about how we should act. I want to just say a quote from a Michael Arsenault, who wrote an article in the Independent, and the article is entitled, "I respect you immensely, Barack Obama, but I don't need lessons about being woke and cancel culture." Now, we're going to talk more about what this is, being woke and cancel culture, but I just want to share with you what Michael Arsenault said to in his article, just a line from his article. He writes, "Obama can believe what he wants, but the era of hope and change was succeeded by American carnage. There are lessons to be learned from that, and one of them should be to call out wrong when spotted. Some people can stand to chill, but to act like this period we're in isn't more rewarding than it is detrimental is a tale I won't fall for." Michael Arsenault in The Independent. And Celeste has some wisdom to share with us about this. And why do you thought we wanted to talk about this?
Well, the whole thing about cancel culture, I think, sometimes gets confused, like many things, as we're in a really volatile period in I don't know whether to call it our community or our culture or civilization or what, but at least as far as American culture is concerned and society, we're in a really hyper volatile situation. Now, I disagree with some aspects of what Obama says regarding cancel culture, because if we waited till someone was pure as a human being to call out something, there's a good chance that you and I might be, at best, indentured servants, and at worst, dead, you know, because slavery wouldn't have ended, because the people who called that out weren't pure. They were human beings, you know, in all of our flaws and foibles. So I kind of have an issue with that. And then when I hear Barack lecturing like that, my response is I'm feeling like I'm hearing either Bill Cosby or a nightmare version of my father, you know,
right.
Telling me what to do. And I say nightmare version because even though my father was a lecturer and we'd rather he just, you know, sometimes just, yeah, can I have a spanking instead, Dad? His was benign and he loved us and we knew it, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he demonstrated it too many ways in that he knew it. He loved us. So I don't like this whole lecturing at us. There's elements of what he says that make sense, however, so you have to really sift through it and do some critical thinking and analysis. The fact that it's not activism is a great statement, I think, because sometimes it really is. Mm-hmm. It is activism to call out that somebody is not doing something properly or that this is not acceptable. And that's the part where it, cancel culture being it, I think is most relevant. And if you look at cancel culture as the youth describe it, young people, It's when a friend or an associate or maybe just somebody in the room is using language or behaving in a way that's detrimental to some member of the group. Mm-hmm. And for example, we've heard stories of somebody playing a song that's misogynistic or uses, you know, racial slurs that's not appropriate or that, you know, you just don't need to use it. And someone will call it out and say, hey, you know, that song says this about us and that doesn't feel good. And the person says, yeah, I know, but I like the beat. Or they may say, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I like the beat. And so folks will say, well, okay, you got your right to like the beat, but we got the right to not associate with you anymore. You are canceled, you know. And that's where it, although it's full of that youthful ideology and half-thought-out things, or maybe, I shouldn't say half-thought-out, like, you know, I'm denigrating it, but, you know, youth don't always have the capacity to give it as deep a thought. Because their brains aren't developed, but I think they are using their capacities to call out what is not appropriate behavior.
Now it occurred to me that, you know, and I appreciate how you help explain cancel culture for our listeners.
You know, and this is one aspect of, because I'm sure it has mutated.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it occurred to me when I was thinking about this that this is certainly nothing new in terms of how people have responded.
Not at all. You're right.
And what came to my mind was was it Hawthorne, The Scarlet Letter?
Oh, yes, there you go. Cancel culture.
You know, 17th century Salem. I mean,
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to look at it. And I think maybe that's what Obama means. Mm-hmm. I think the difference is there are those who will say, well, and especially in that one article I had pointed out that was from, I think, the New York Times. And it was, you want to understand cancel culture, talk to a young person.
Right.
And essentially they say, you know, I'm not a teen, I'm not there, so, you know, you can't hold me accountable for everything. I'm trying to explain as best as I can research it. They say you can get called out a number of ways, you know, but basically you either get called out because you're doing something that's wrong and you get canceled and they're telling you, okay, this is not the way we're going to handle it. And if you don't respond, you know, then you are ignored.
Yes.
You know, if you respond, then the idea is, you know, we talk to you and we show you why this is hurting the people that you supposedly care about. So if you're calling them out in love, there's a dialogue going on.
Well, you know, and if you call them out in love, that's talking about my response to something that I feel is wrong. So I lovingly call you out.
Right.
The challenge is, and I think I've read a couple of articles, and I think the article I quoted from Michael Arsenault said that, you know, in this era, you don't defeat Trump by being nice.
Well, see, but we're not always talking to Trump. Sometimes we're talking to somebody who is actually willing to listen and to change the situation.
And the challenge is that, for me at least, this idea of cancel culture is not... it's often used, I think, to attack the progressive end of the political spectrum, and that this sense of moral righteousness and that we know what is right is not something that is only the progressive have to deal with, but in our society right now, where the political right is in power.
Yeah.
Their cancel culture. I mean, just listen to talk radio.
Oh yes.
And everything associated with the political right wing.
Mm-hmm.
they have no shame in doing this to
they have no compunction in being just plain old rude. We're right. rude too, but they have really turned the barbs, which is fascinating to me because some of the members of this group purport to be Christian, and it's like that's not the way you roll. You
well,
know,
hey, that's a whole
that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, but I look at Kellyanne right. Conway, and mm-hmm. I look at how she attempts to cancel things by mm-hmm. creating a whole new form of logic. You know, I don't know yeah. what dimension she pulls this stuff out of. All I will say about Kellyanne, well, no, I got two things I have to say, is I pray for her, mm-hmm. and she is evil genius. You know, it's like, if she were to turn her powers to good, what she could do. That woman is a genius. I don't know any other way to call it, but an evil genius. That's mm-hmm. it, and to pray for. So you're right, the cancel culture is not exclusive, you know, and it's not new. And people use it. I think it gets a name now because everything has a name. I mean, you know, we take photographs of our breakfast, or, you know, when we get the little peak in the hair just right, you know, mm-hmm. we want to take a picture and show it to somebody and say, you know, this is it. You know, so we're always documenting and naming stuff nowadays.
Well, that's the point, because of the rise of social media.
Right.
And so it's something that has changed so mm-hmm. much, so that we are, you know, we can have a private conversation, and mm-hmm. and I can talk to you now. Nowadays, you know, it's usually, as you suggested, it's posted, you know,
yep.
and whatever social media platform you use, and it's there forever.
Yes.
And so maybe we get, and we're so quick to want to post something and not pausing to realize that it has a life cycle of forever.
And not only that, it will not be frozen in time with regard to its meaning. Its meaning will be interpreted by many people a whole bunch of different ways. They'll add their slant to it. Somebody else will add their slant. And it's not even telephone anymore. I don't know what the name of it is. It's kind of like, what would you even call that? I'd call it a virus. It just explodes all different yes. ways. So, you know, exponential growth, it doesn't even describe it. It would be like 9 dimensions of exponential growth. Who knows? But, you know, that's what changes us. But to get right back to what we were talking about, this whole idea of cancel culture and how we're being, I think, lectured by Mr. Obama, I think we need to sit down and think about, if he has an issue with it, how connected is he really to what we're trying to get done? I don't think that the people who called out what happened in Charlottesville mm-hmm. and using their various forms of cancel culture with regard to the people who they might discuss that with, who thought that Trump was right to say there are good and bad people on both sides. I think that he's ignoring the fact that we don't have to be perfect to call out wrong.
Oh,
you know, I think we know when something is right and wrong. It's a matter of whether we accept the responsibility of knowing what's right and wrong and making a difference. See, Trump, he won't make a change. He doesn't care. And, you know, the fact that he's suggesting that there needs to have a rollback of protection of watersheds and waterbeds where coal mining and whatever is, and, you know, and hearing from people that that's going to cause a lot more health challenges and environmental challenges, he has to know that. He knows the coal is not efficient. because he doesn't run his businesses like that. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows that there's been some issue regarding climate change because he's protecting his properties. So, you know, that's a man who knows what's right and wrong and doesn't care. So, no, you're not nice when you speak to him, you know. At least people are not going to feel nice when they hear what he's saying or they encounter what he's saying. You know, those of us who are trying to remain in the spiritual dimension are going to try very hard to be nice, you know.
And being
I love
nice,
that smile on your face. That was perfect.
And being nice, you are listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. And we would like to hear what some people think about cancel culture.
Is it effective? You know, are we fooling ourselves? You know, I know that some people may not care that they're canceled, but others do. I mean, it has a profound effect on us when we're separated from our groups of people. You know, our families, our friends, the people who see us and care about us. If you get kicked to the curb, you know, it feels bad. If you don't believe me, go back and read Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And so let's focus this morning. I know there's lots of things we want to talk about, but in terms of cancel culture.
Yeah.
And we'll hear what you have to think, and if you don't like it, we'll cancel you. No.
If you don't like it, you know, well, I'm sorry. You know, just be polite. That's it. You don't have to agree with you. You already know that. Yeah, you don't have to agree. What?
Oh, no.
Okay.
So, again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to.
Let me turn up my headphone because I can't hear anything.
Oh yeah, we had problems.
There we go. Problems.
Oh, there it is.
All right.
Oh, that's probably why I couldn't hear it earlier. Okay. Let's go to our caller. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
So it sounds like 503-231-8187. Is that the correct number?
That's correct.
Well, didn't you reach it?
Yeah, but I thought Cecil was hesitating. You all are having a good time this morning, kind of entertaining the section of the program. And Cecil's done the program for a while, but yeah, it may be early in the morning to get the phone.
Wait a minute, why are you critiquing my co-host instead of making your point?
Well, in terms
let's cancel that part.
In terms of cancel culture, yeah, this seems to be one of these. It sounded like you all agree that Kellyanne Conway is kind of the Aristotle of cancel culture, or is that
No, I don't. No, she's an evil genius, and I'm not giving her any other credit or any other title. That's it.
So in terms of polite conversation, which might be the opposite of cancel culture, I thought I would mention something and then ask a question, because you may have other callers, of course. In terms of polite conversation, there is an event at PSU Wednesday night, 6 p.m. It's a candidate forum with 11 candidates.
Okay, wait, Lou, stop.
Yeah, thanks, Rolla. Thanks for your help.
Stop. See, so that's all we're good for him.
Oh,
see
dear.
That? Okay, there is more in the world than what you were doing, Lou. That's rude.
Well,
you know, other people have other ideas about what is important too. I'm not saying yours is not important, but that's really rude. So you call up and you talk about your stuff before you even bring up your point. Now, somebody who else who might have been on, you know, they would hear that and think, you know, is this another one of those guys? Because we get calls, and I have people stop me and say, why do you let these people call and talk about stuff that has nothing to do with your show? And then I feel kind of slightly guilty because they were actually listening, and so they heard that somebody called and talked and didn't have anything to do with the show. And I tell them, well, we try to be amenable, open, considering. She said, well, she and they, the rest of them, said, well, but it has nothing to do with the show. It sets a bad tone. It's like you're letting people get away with avoiding the topic and avoiding the fact that you actually set out something that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
And not stick to the program.
So I thought the last 2 minutes might be an object lesson of such.
It was. I'm still processing.
I think I heard either you or the caller talk about polite.
Mm-hmm. And how did he start out the conversation? Criticizing you.
Well, that's yeah. I don't care.
I know we don't, but I'm just saying.
But the point was, how do we have conversation in a way in which we can get our points across? So I'm sure the event that the caller was mentioning was very important, and that we should let people should know about it.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think there's a need to pause and to have feedback. I think a problem of maybe cancel culture, and this may be symbolic of it, when someone is not where we are right now, we cancel them, we hang up, and we move on, which isn't helpful for the life of all of us. So,
well, let me ask you a question. And we can add this with the whole idea of cancel culture.
Mm-hmm.
I am providing a service, okay? And for the sake of simplicity, I fix people's hair.
Mm-hmm.
I comb it, I brush it, I braid it, I wash it. That's all I do. Don't do colors, don't do fingernails, nothing else. A person comes in, and they want a service. And I said, okay, well, what would you like? And they asked for something I don't have or I don't do. And I said, well, I can do this for you, but I don't do that. Well, why not? Because this is what I do. Well, you need to expand your repertoire. Well, I am doing this because this works out for either my time or my talents or my interests. And it is an important service, but it may not be the service you want right then. And I say, well, my friend across the street will do that for you. Well, no, I want to do it right here. This is where I want to do it. I'm here. I want to do it here. I won't do that. I don't. And, you know, to shorten the story, who is disrespecting who?
Mm.
Who is disrespecting what platform? And sometimes that's part of this whole counterculture. And it's not like we haven't had this kind of discussion before, you know, because we've even had people call us up and take us to task and say, we listen, we support the KBOO, and we'd like people to stay on task.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking, it's okay if you ask me, can I say this? Would you allow this? But don't assume that because we don't talk about it, number one, we don't think it's important. Number two, that we're too stupid to know that that's important. Or number three, we need somebody to tell us how to do what we're doing because the way we're doing it is not satisfactory to them. And that's my challenge. It's like if we have a topic, is it wrong for us to want to stick to it and have a conversation about it? Or should I start clipping toenails and painting them? I don't know. I'm trying to understand.
Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're speaking about cancel culture.
Yes, we are.
And we have a couple of callers.
And thank you for waiting.
Thank you for waiting. Let's go to our caller. Good morning. Yes, it's
Hi.
You. Yes.
Okay, good morning, Cecil, and good morning, Celeste. I just wanted to ask you in relation to the topic, do you see a difference between calling out a structure or a system or an institution and calling out individuals?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Okay, and I can answer off the air, but I just...
No. Stay on and talk to us, you know. I really do. For me, an institution that is systematically making life difficult for people doesn't necessarily need it to be nice, okay?
Right.
You can
yeah.
tell a system once or twice in its inception, hey, this ain't working. A system usually has been set up by people who aggregate their power and they tend not to care. They know, You know, right. They want what they want. A person I'm going to try to have a face-to-face with and see if there's any way that we can come to a mutual understanding. But I'm, you know, I don't see a system, I think, is one of those situations in which you can't be nice. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And that's why when I might have misunderstood you, but I thought you said that ending enslavement, at least one version of it, in the 19th and early 20th centuries in America, was a form of call-out culture. And I don't know if I got that right, but
It was, but it didn't take perfect people. And I was responding to Mr. Obama saying, you know, you can't be so involved in call-out culture or cancel culture because none of us are pure. And it's like, I said, well, if that's how he feels, we'd all still be, you know, people of color would probably still be slaves or dead because the people who called out slavery weren't perfect, but they got it ended, and they did the right thing.
Right. They got it ended. And they were also calling out an institution.
Yes.
I thought.
Yes, they were. Yeah.
What I was thinking. So, okay, listen, I know you've got other people, but thank you so much for your time and for this topic and for your show.
Well, thank you for sticking by and talking to us, too.
All right. You take care now.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we have, I believe, Anna next. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Hi there, you guys. You guys are great, of course. You're thinkers. My question, when you mentioned the way we talk to each other, it's so important. And what I've noticed in the last, goodness, I don't know, maybe 20 years, our attention spans are so short and we're so distracted and jerked out of this conversation into another one. I don't know how the common people are going to learn how to talk to each other. When I was a young woman, I'm in my 60s, but when I was in my 20s, people called me a philosopher because I dared to talk about stuff that was deep instead of shallow. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, I loved my fashion and my high heels. I looked good in them.
Yeah, I heard that.
But the thing is I'm a, what's the word, dichotomy? Is that the right word?
Yeah.
I'm a real strange combination of things. And people don't, they'd read me from my, you know, judge my book by its cover, and they don't get into it deep. So I've not been nice. I have been like forceful, and people don't expect that from me because I don't look like, you know. So the way we talk to each other, I've noticed it in little children.
Yes.
They are disrespectful to their parents. If the parents don't call them out on it in a gentle way right away, they continue on. And then they bring that to their teen years and into their 20s and on. So the way we talk to each other is very important. And I'm a loner because I've found it's very hard to get anyone to talk deeply.
So
in a thinker's way. Yeah.
So Anna, you began by observing that our attention span had shortened. How do we? And I'm sure that that's related to a lot of things.
Technology
in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to you know, text and whatever.
Yeah, it's like we can't talk.
Tweet. Yeah, like the president does.
Yeah.
So how do we?
Yeah, you're interrupted by everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, I some time ago saw this news piece. It was on CBS this morning, and the Center for Humane Technology co-founder and executive director Tristan Harris was on, and he was talking about some of the dangers of technology in humans, like it shortens attention spans, it rewards outrage, it will reward outrage, it addicts our children,
absolutely.
And it polarizes us, especially politically. And so, you know, what you're saying is pointing out the things that we see, but we want to excuse away because we enjoy our technology. You know, we enjoy the enslavement it's given us. And
well,
so,
you're right.
Huh?
You're right. The thing is I've not, see, I watch, I'm in my late 60s. I'm pushing 70. And I've noticed when I watch the YouTube, which is a fantastic invention, that I'm not allowed to watch through one program. I got to have all kinds of advertising pushed up on me.
Just like television. And
it's worse than almost. Mm. I don't watch TV. I don't have one. But the thing is my YouTube, I observe it. And when I go to make a comment, I make sure that I have a positive comment that makes people think. And I get a lot of thumbs up from people, you know. But, yeah, there's, I'm not a licensed psychologist, but I've been observing psychology for many, many years. And I have seen that the YouTube is extraordinarily distracting.
It is indeed. And I thank you so much for your call and your words of wisdom.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you listened. I'm listening to you.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Anna. Before we go to our next caller, let me remind our listeners that you are listening to KBOO, and following our program, it's the Omo Variety Hour, social and political commentary from a socialist feminist point of view. At 10, it's Locus Focus with our host, Barbara Bernstein. At 11, it's First Voices Radio, where host Teo Carson Ghost Horse talks about global topics and issues of critical importance to the preservation and protection of Mother Earth. And don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. Want a third way to listen to your favorite KBOO program? Then you have to download our app, mobile app, today. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're talking about
cancel culture.
Cancel culture.
You know, how we use it, what it means, how we can make it work better than it might. I don't know.
And Michael, are you still there? If so, we would like to talk to you.
I am still here.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning.
Well, yes.
I think the reason that cancel culture has gotten to be a thing that people are discussing now is because there's a particular kind of thing that's done, and it's just about exclusively done by people on the far left. And I have a perfect example of cancel culture to talk about, which is, and I may have talked about him before on this show, there's a guy named Daryl Davis. Daryl Davis is a black guy who is a blues musician or a rhythm and blues musician, and his thing is he befriends members of the Klan.
Oh, yes, I remember you talking about him. Go ahead.
Yeah. And you know, he befriends them to the point where they get to be sorry for what they were doing, and they give him their robes, and he has something like 20 sets of Klan robes now.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So there's a journalist named Tim Pool, who lives, I think, somewhere near Philadelphia, and he wanted to put on a show. I mean, I don't mean a show. I mean a discussion in a theater and this guy Daryl Davis was invited, and Antifa decided that this was something that shouldn't happen. They wanted to cancel it. And they made threats, and one theater decided not to do it because they were afraid of the threats, and it was put on in another theater. Meanwhile, Tim Pool and Daryl Davis invite these Antifa people to be part of the event, and, you know, let's discuss this. What's your objection to this? And so on. Let's have a rational discussion. Antifa refused, and they demonstrated in front of this thing so that there had to be cops there to protect it. And at one point, I mean, this is...
Did they ever meet, or what was the conclusion of this?
Well, yeah, they did have the meeting because they had enough cops to protect it. And at one point, Antifa accused Daryl Davis, the black rhythm and blues musician, of being a, quote, white supremacist, close quotes. Mm-hmm. They not only didn't want to talk to them, they didn't want that talk to even go on.
Okay,
they wanted to cancel it.
Let me respond in part, and I thank you for sharing that as a danger that we have. One, I want to challenge you how you began by saying it's exclusively something on the progressive end. I think it's very difficult, and you might be more familiar than I am. For example, if you listen to most talk radio, And the language they used, and also some of the political leaders on the right who practice that same sort of thing. So it's impossible to have a conversation, and that is very difficult for those on moderate or left to have an opportunity on media that's run by the right wing. It's not exclusive to one political perspective or the other. I appreciate what you're saying. And the second point I want to say is that we must also recognize that when you mentioned the Klan, the trauma that it brings up, and I think that many people who are not impacted by, for example, rape culture or fiercely racist language and action, and how it impacts people and how they respond. So it may be impossible for people to have a calm conversation about these things. So a challenge would be is to recognize how they impact people, and then to really recognize, well, why is it, do they find it difficult to talk to someone who represents something that's very traumatic to them?
But they didn't have a Klan member there. They had this guy, but no, his friend's Klan members, and get robes from them.
Right. But the idea that robes of clans, I mean, it may be really difficult for people to sit there and take it all calmly. I mean, the Klan represent torture and murder and a lot of
unrepentant killing. Let's put it that way.
And so it's difficult for, I don't expect, for example, someone to sit, I'll just speak from that perspective because I can speak. I was going to talk about other examples of terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
But as a black person in America, I find it very difficult to be calm and rational about terrorists who impacted my family. And it doesn't mean that I don't need to try, but I think those who say, well, you're not being reasonable, don't really realize that the trauma and the impact that it has.
But would you want to shut an event down as opposed to, well, I don't think I can handle this, I'm not going to go?
Okay, here's the thing. I think you're missing certain elements of what he's saying. If there's going to be items there that people are not comfortable with, like the robes, which have a direct correlation to terror, which may be passed down generationally, there are some people who will be stressed out about it. Now, I'm not saying don't go, but what we should do is have a dialogue and find out what it is that can be done to let the discussion carry forth without whatever other challenges there may be. I mean, do we have to have the robes? Maybe not. For some people, it might be traumatized. Now, maybe those people who are traumatized shouldn't go, because I also feel like you don't put yourself in fire. I mean, if you want to hear what the man says, but you don't want to be there because the robes are going to be there, you don't put yourself in fire. So I do hear what you're saying about it's not helpful for Antifa to have a protest to keep people from going and hearing how this man is breaking down barriers. But at the same time, at least folks should understand why some people might be traumatized at it. And that means have a conversation. That's all we're saying.
But Antifa refused to have a conversation.
I know.
For them to be part of the event.
Yeah,
I know. I hear that. And it happened in Philadelphia. And I was reading something on BoardGameGeek.com about the very event that happened in Philadelphia that Daryl Davis was talking about. And I can't excuse Antifa. I'm not excusing them. I think it was not really mature to take that point of view, you know, but it's not just the left. And that's the thing we have to remember. It's all of us. And so that's why I'm talking about we need to examine this whole thing of counterculture. I mean, cancel culture and figure out how do we fine tune it. But thank you for your call.
Thank you, Michael. Okay. And you are listening to KBOO FM, More Talk Radio, 503-231-8187. Cancel culture. We won't cancel you if you call us. Let's speak to Robbie, I believe.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to one thing. I wanted to mention one thing that I do, and that's I like to particularly call out Joey Gibson, and you know, read Bible passages to him. Those that, you know, interfere and show out the hypocrisy of, you know, the far right. But that's one thing that I do think is dangerous. I think we need to be distinctive of what and how we're calling out, because one thing that I have to run into as I, you know, engage the right with, you know, intellect of whether it's, you know, the Bible or, you know, whatever freedoms that, you know, they're hypocrisy about. But if we call them out, we have to be able to do it in a way that is, productive. And one thing that I find not productive is in what the last caller was trying to, I think, what he's concerned about is when we just shut it down and we're not allowing that other side to, you know, say what it is. So I guess one thing, this has been something that I've come to terms a lot with, but I don't believe in giving them a platform. But if they have that platform, we need to engage them, and we need to be able to, you know, specifically speak to what it is we're calling out. If we, for instance, there's times where, I don't know, somebody had mentioned Jordan Peterson in a conversation or whatever, and the moment that person brought up just the name Jordan Peterson, the other person was just immediately like, I don't know, it's scary to me. I think we should just kind of focus on being able to engage them with it instead of shutting down everything. That's one thing that I try to do. I bring a dialogue to a lot of the far right rallies when they come down here. I go down there, I preach the Bible to Joey Gibson, as I said, or anybody out there that's willing to listen. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to do work to try to make them understand about where we're coming from on the one on the left. And a lot of times I see people just shouting down other people, and it's not healthy for the engagement. But I just wanted to bring that, because that's just something that I see a lot. So if we're going to call out something, I think we should try to do it in a productive way, and not just shouting over them, but, you know, calling out exactly what it is wrong.
I agree. That's the thing that made me feel just a little bit, I don't want to say confused, but not exactly totally hearing, but just not accepting everything that Mr. Obama said. You know, like, we're not pure. Well, we're human beings. That's what dialogue is supposed to help us with, you know, the fact that we have different perspectives. My challenge, though, is when I hear something that is not on point or is not on task, and trying to recenter a conversation from where we've originally pointed it, I'll call that out. And I try not to do it rudely, but you got to do it quickly, because that's a challenge when you have, and that's part of what I was talking about. When you're doing a talk show, you got a few minutes. You want to hear what the person's saying when it's relevant to the point, but you can't let your conversation or your topic be recentered away from where you were. And that's what I liked about the way you just threw your point down and kept everything centered right on how we were talking about cancel culture and how it can be productive or not. You were right on point. I appreciate that. Yeah, the way you did it.
Thank you, Robbie.
Oh, I appreciate your phone call. Have a good day.
Okay, you too.
You too. 503-231-8187. And Lou, actually, I'm reading it, so I'll get the numbers correct.
I'm not criticizing you. It's like, that's called Monday, and I'm in a whole different frame.
All right. But one thing I noticed about the last caller, Robbie, and he mentioned, you know, the need for dialogue and conversation, that part of it, I think, in our larger society, and a previous caller talked about how our attention spans are really short.
Yes.
And so we need to train ourselves to listen and to speak. It becomes difficult because, I mean, how do you respond or how do you find common ground when so much like the rhetoric we hear and is just in your perspective ridiculous. So the president goes on and he just tells mistruths over and over and over again.
You're so kind. You said mistruths, lies.
Well,
lies.
They're not, yeah.
Because they ain't the truth and they're not alternative facts.
But where do you find, is it possible to find common ground? Because if you live in an alternative reality, whew.
Well, see, you got to remember they don't want to find common ground. Okay, and in communication, we talk about how someone will phrase a statement or they use a particular communication style that stops dialogue before they're even through talking because of the way they present their whatever the piece is that they're saying. He's not giving us a conversation open to dialogue. He being Trump, is telling us what he wants us to hear. And whether it's a misdirection or one time when he's telling the truth, is not designed for dialogue.
And if that's the case, that doesn't mean that do we just give up and say, okay, no dialogue is possible? Where does transformation come in? Because people like the earlier caller who had some arguments about people on the left who say that they don't want dialogue. But whether a person wants dialogue or not, if you believe that there's a common humanity, somehow we have to dig deeper to find a point of connection with the other. And that doesn't does that mean that we have to be long-suffering and just let them keep beating us until they stop?
I don't see it that way. And I don't want to forget that Sam is there.
Okay.
So I'll wait until after we get a chance to talk to Sam because I want to hear what he has to say. Good morning, Sam. Thanks for holding. Hello? Did we lose you? Sam?
Hello?
Okay, well,
I don't know if you have Sam, but I've been waiting on call.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Thank you for waiting.
I thank you so much for having this topic and handling as well as you have. I think when we cancel out other ideas in a way that cancels out the other person as an individual and their feelings and needs and values, we're canceling out our own humanity and our shared journey, that we need each other for our own individual healing and growth, and we need each other in our collective work for social change. We can't afford to be divided and conquered. We've got major issues to deal with.
Now that's true.
So when I am in a lot of left groups, and we're trying, we're just finding out about racism or something, and suddenly now trying to kind of try to prove to people that we're better than they are. It's one of the first things.
Oh, okay, caller, are you on a cell phone? Because we are losing your signal.
I am not on a cell phone.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah. Okay. Well, just finish what you're saying. We'll try to repeat it as best we can. And we're almost out of time.
Okay, well, I think that if we're trying to change behaviors, mean words, and attitudes and policies, we need to address the person's feelings and needs and their humanity. They're not going to listen to us if we're the enemy attacking them, calling them names. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to, their defensiveness and denial and counterattack is going to prevent the humility, the creativity, and the teamwork and the courage that we need to solve these problems. So it's always easier to find fault with others, and that's one of the first steps of moral development. saying no to someone else eating cookies while you're stealing the cookies yourself.
Hello.
But the most important thing is for us to reach forward.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for your call. And just quick last words. When we got somebody like a leader who is resistant, we have to work it as a team. And we also have to attack the structure that supports and protects that person. So that means that if we can't get him directly, we get the structure. And we don't have to be nice to the structure, if we've determined before earlier. I want to thank everybody for supporting your community radio station, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Development Committee will meet the first Wednesday of each month at 4:30 p.m.
This is a good old song called "I Wish I Was a Mole in the Ground." Sometimes you ain't what you think you want to be, but dadgummit, be satisfied, because you ain't what you don't want to be, and if you ain't what you don't want to be, you don't want to be something you ain't. That's good English for you, boy. This boy got it so bad, he said he wished he was a mole in the ground. He got it bad. Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. Lord, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. If I wish I was a mole in the ground. I wish I was a baby in mama's arms. I wish I was a baby in mama's arms.